Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Rebecca, who is here to talk with us about the Reflective Listening Buddies program. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thanks, Jan. Can you hear me okay?
I can. You can hear me?
Great. Yep, perfectly.
Good. So I'm thinking that the Reflective Listening Buddies program is maybe the longest running, far-flung practice support we have. If not, the oldest, certainly close, huh?
Yeah, you know, I was just looking at that very thing. I would say it is. It was our first sort of, beyond coming to the monastery and getting the newsletter, here's what you can do, you know, to practice.
Yeah.
And gosh,
yeah,
it's been,
I remember.
It's been a game changer.
Sorry, what's that?
Oh, I said, and gosh, it's been a game changer in my practice.
It
anyway.
Has. I mean, I remember, I mean, many, many, many years ago now, that I think it was a woman who'd been practicing for quite a while and was very dedicated to coming to the monastery and kind of saying, you know what, I need more support and having this brainstorm. And that from there, you know, this tiny little idea grew into a flourishing program that we offer, is it four times a year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's year round.
It's
offered year round.
Four entry points.
Four different quarters. Right, four entry points. And that's a good point, that it really is an entry point. You know, even though there are some prerequisites, you know, to being in the program, it's such a great practice for people who are new, you know, relatively new.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they do have to sort of be familiar with the language, like having been in an email class or working with a coach or having been on retreat. You know, one of those three are the entry points in. But once they've sort of kind of gotten the hang of, you know, just so we know what we're talking about, then Reflective Listening Buddies is a great way to deepen your practice and really get a solid foundation.
So maybe you can tell us a little bit about the, kind of the nuts and bolts of how the program works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you sign up, first of all. That's the most important part. and that needs to happen before July 1 at 5 o'clock. So that's when registration is.
Perfect. So two more weeks.
It's 5 o'clock. And then you, if you're brand new to the program, you attend a training call. Well, you're sent the guidelines so you can kind of read how the program works.
Uh-huh.
And then if you're brand new to the program, you jump on a training call, and those dates are on the website.
Okay.
And there's one of the RLB facilitators there to walk you through any questions or any, you know, anything. And we love old-timers to be on those calls as well, because it just enriches the experience for everybody.
Yeah.
And then on the 15th of July, in this case, since that's the quarter we're about to start, you're sent an email with your buddy assignment. And then you two communicate by email to set up your time. You know, okay, we're going to do, how about Wednesdays at 8? Does that work for you? You know, and all this. And you're given their contact information. And then you start talking each week, and their calls are 30 minutes each, with each person getting a 15-minute turn to talk about whatever is going on in their life and their practice, you know. And the buddy's part is to, you know, intermittently in those 15 minutes to reflect what you're saying. So you get somebody's undivided attention for 15 minutes and get to hear your words back to you without any embellishment or any, you know, annoying helping or advice.
What a rare gift, huh?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then you switch. You know, at the end of 15 minutes, you switch and you become the person that's giving the full attention and reflection. And then you simply click, hang up the phone. I don't get phones click anymore. They just push it, you know. But, yeah, you just, and so you don't chit-chat or you don't, you know, it's not about making a friend in song or building a relationship or anything like that, although I think people's experience highly bears out that there's a level of intimacy and love and acceptance of people, of everybody that they're buddied with, even though they may never speak to that person again.
Yeah. For sure, there'd have to be, really, right? Because that's experience of being listened to in that unconditional way, and someone just taking the time to reflect our own words just the way we said them back to us, that's a great act of love and kindness, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and we get to see how alike we all are, you know, because I've never had a buddy that I didn't completely relate to what they were saying, you know.
Yeah. And so the training call that you mentioned would give someone the skills they needed in terms of what is reflective listening and how do I do that and all those things.
Yes, we do a little, you know, role play and we model it for people, and it's quite simple. So utterly simple. The only complication is what conditioned mind brings to it. And that's what we're practicing seeing. So, you know, you just can't lose because, there's just no way to do it wrong at all.
God, relaxing.
Yeah. And
so
fun.
I know you're a veteran of the program and on many levels. And so I'm just curious, what have you noticed in your own experience or heard from participants in terms of the impact on practice for people?
Wow. You know, I was just looking at that, and you know how, as I said, it's a game changer. It was a game changer in my life, and I think one way to describe it would be it taught me and gave me direct experience of a totally different way of being with people that I would have never in a million years had occurred to me without this kind of practice, that you can be with a person and reflect them. You know, maybe not in going around in daily life, I don't just say exactly back using their own words what they say to me, but it's learning a posture to be in the world.
You know,
and the beauty of that, just so in case someone's thinking, well, why would I ever want to have that posture, you know,
right,
is that it really facilitates those three things that Sherry often says: pay attention, don't believe anything, and don't take anything personally.
Yeah, it really
does. Like that posture really facilitates those things to be in one's life, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think I do. And so I think you're using that word posture to mean just a way of being, kind of an approach
approach. Yeah, exactly.
And that practice, that simple practice of learning to reflect someone, you know, boy, does it go well with our recent email class, doesn't it? On the Enneagram and communication, and how the last several good news updates we've been hearing from people, their insights on communication, and how much people are seeing that, you know, whatever their particular sort of karmic bent is, what their Enneatype is, what their conditioned habits are, have such a huge impact on communication, and therefore what a big impact that has on how our relationships go. But to use the skill of reflective listening, where essentially it just automatically and allows us the experience of simply listening, so we actually get to experience the people in our lives that we love and care about, and also to do that with ourselves.
That we begin
to actually be able to have that clear communication and not have all the conditioning laid on top of it.
Yeah. You know, and I was just thinking as you were talking, and a real canned practical example just dropped in. So I recently had a doctor's visit, and I was getting some instructions. And I could feel like, oh, no, am I going to remember all this? And, you know, and what am I going to do? And so I just said after he finished talking, I said, can I reflect that back, what I think you're saying? And, you know, and it just, and so I said, I gave myself that space, first of all, not just kind of what conditioning would have me do. It's like, okay, I've got to remember, and not really be listening to him, but trying to take mental notes, which is a totally different process than listening, right? And so by allowing myself the space to just, okay, I can check all this out, it opened it up for me to, like you were saying, to really be in the communication. And then, you know, gave him the chance to you know, make sure I was on track with what I was being instructed to do. So, I don't know, I project it was just a win-win because the person speaking really feels heard and the person listening really is clear, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that because I just had a similar experience, and the healthcare professional that I was interacting with, I projected was completely surprised. Wow. You know, that might not happen that often, that someone actually listens that closely and makes sure that they've got the information. But imagine how different the world would be if we were all doing that all the time. You know, world leaders. Now, let me make sure I'm understanding what you're saying. What I'm hearing you say is that your people are feeling.
We sure save a ton of paper at the very least, because then we wouldn't, you know, like as I left his office with like this little booklet, you know.
That's right, because they know people can't pay attention, so.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so great. We're coming up against our hour, but just how great it is that we have all of these opportunities to practice at a distance. And, you know, as you were talking about that, it's the clear guidelines, and that you people are given instruction in the guidelines, and the calls are 30 minutes, and they're structured in a very particular way so that it's all within the privileged environment. Just so much gratitude for the care and attention that everyone, and I know this is certainly true for you, put a lot of time and care and energy into making sure that those programs are run in the way that we want them to be run in order for the integrity of practice to be held for all of us.
Yeah, thank you for that and for mentioning the privileged environment and that, because it really is the bedrock of everything. So that's what I think people comment again and again and again about the safety of the program, how safe it is to be able to say anything I want to look at, you know, not have to worry about it being mistreated or in some way, you know, it hurts that I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And it really does all come down to the privileged environment and the integrity with which we practice that and hold that. And so, yeah, that's another reason it's good to be on the training call, and whether you're brand new to the, I mean, obviously if you're brand new, but even if you've been in the program a while, to really get that in the marrow of our bones, what that's about, it's such a gift.
So hopping on livingcompassion.org, and if they're seeing that beautiful wheel on the homepage, I can't remember the image, but I'm
program.
Pretty sure. What's that?
I can't remember the image either. I just remember it's programs is what
programs,
highlights.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the
programs.
Tab once you get over to the,
And
just jump on and sign up, and it's a wonderful experience. I can guarantee people won't regret it unless they're just totally listening to conditioned mind, which we're not.
If they wouldn't be by the end of that quarter, I can promise you.
Exactly. And if they were, they could say to their reflective listening buddy, you know, I'm really practicing getting out of conditioned mind and get to hear that intention reflected.
Exactly. So what I hear you saying is, Well, thank you so much for being with us, Rebecca, and thank you for all the work that you do to help make that program possible.
Oh, thank you, Jen. My pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Rebecca. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How you doing?
Fabulous. How are you?
Good, good, great. Now, that program is a favorite of yours. Is that true?
It is.
That reflects
it.
Yeah, I think you've done about 1,000 of those in the past. maybe not quite 1,000, but a lot.
Yeah. It is great to connect with people and have that opportunity and the safety, as Rebecca and Jen were talking about, and that, you know, that one-on-one connection and the intimacy.
And I love that comment, that the part that they were talking about with you'll have, if you do the program several times, you'll, of course, have several different buddies. And so you, for 3 months, I guess that's how long 4 quarters is, 3 months, once a week, you're having this very intimate conversation with this person who is only a name and a phone number to you, right? Maybe an email address. That's it. So it's just, again, tremendously intimate, and you don't know each other. So there, over time, you're having that kind of experience with person after person after person in the Sangha. And because of the privileged environment, then when you hear that person on open air or you're on retreat and you hear that person's name and you hear their voice and you think, oh, that's that's my buddy. And there's just such a feeling of closeness and connection and caring that is completely without personality. There's nothing personal about it at all. It's just you've been with somebody in this heart-to-heart way, and it's just like nothing else in the world, at least nothing else that I know of.
Yes, and I love that because it illustrates one of those Zen paradoxes, which is it's impersonal, and yet I feel so personally connected to everyone in the Sangha. It's great.
Yes. Yes. How can it be so intimate and be impersonal? That when a person knows the answer to that, the person understands practice, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That's fun. Yep. What's going on? What's going on in the world of practice? I think you have the lowdown.
I do. And as we just heard from Jen and Rebecca, you can connect with Sangha for weekly support in practicing conscious compassionate awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So sign up for the next Reflective Listening Buddy session, and that starts on July 15th.
Uh-huh.
And for the in-person version, to immerse yourself in practice, don't miss the new In This Way I Do Most Deeply Vow to Train Myself retreat. And there's a few slots still open for that retreat in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is August 31st through September 4th.
Yes, and as I mentioned a while back when we talked about this, Shwenny and I will actually be in Harrisburg the afternoon before that, Sunday afternoon, before we start the retreat on Monday afternoon in Bethlehem. So
wonderful.
Hopefully we'll get to see some folks there.
Great. And so for these and all other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders, if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, press *6 and then 1. That's the way of making guest show. And about a 5-minute conversation would be great, and on one topic, please. So here we go.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Sure. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Michael and Sherry. It's Jeff in North Carolina.
Hello, hi. Jeff.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. What's going on?
Well, I have been, I think, just about every time recently that I've called, I've talked about physical health, and I think I want to talk about that again. It just is so so much more challenging than anything else that's going on. So,
when that's going on, it is very, very difficult to consider focusing on anything else. You know, it's one of those kinds of things that we so take for granted, right? When we're healthy, we just never think about it. And then, boy, when we're not, we see what it is that we have been taking for granted.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. I've wondered, actually, if, you know, I don't know whether things will change in a way that I would be, you know, in quotes, healthy again. But I wondered, you know, would I go back to taking things for granted again, taking health for granted again if that were to happen? If that does happen, I think I'd like to make it a conscious practice of gratitude.
Yes. Yeah. Because you're right. I mean, that is how it works, right? We tend to... because we're used to listening to conditioned mind, we're easily bamboozled, easily fooled into just turning to the next thing that conditioned mind says is the issue right now, and forgetting to focus on what we have, what we've received, what we're grateful for, and of course, an awful lot of people don't realize the importance of that and the truth of that what we get is what we do. So it's again, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, trains a person to just focus on, okay, well, what's wrong now? And so if we're doing that, of course, then that's what our life consists of. Well, what's my life? Well, my life is what's wrong now. If I don't have that habit, if I have a habit of looking to see what's not wrong, what's right, what's good, what I'm grateful for, then that's what my life consists of. And the content of it is largely irrelevant. Right? So, yes, this is going on. I have these health issues, and this is great, and this is great, and this is great. I'm grateful for that, and that, and that, and that, and that. And we realize that in the most dire kinds of circumstances, there's still far more that's working, far more that we want and choose and love than not. It's just where our attention is.
Yeah, that's so good to consider. I've looked at it from both sides of that, as it were. And what I mean by that is, so for instance, I'm doing mornings with a mentor, group coaching, and earlier this week, I'm also just out of school, so having a lot of time to focus on this sort of thing, and I've just recently the health symptoms have gotten, you know, things have gotten a lot more symptomatic, including just in the last few days. So that's always the most challenging time is when things are getting, in quotes, worse. So the first 2 days after school had gotten out, I with the mentor in the morning, I set a focus the first day on joy, and the next day on gratitude, and it was great. I had just some really wonderful times, so that being when I'm able to keep the attention there, you know, when I'm not drawn back into the system of what's wrong, basically, and then I got caught up in it again, and I've been basically in the system to some extent. Not, you know, I come out of it, and I see to some extent that I'm in it, but I've been much more in that, you know, gosh, this really seems really real kind of place, and you know, oh my gosh, how is this going to work out, and what miracle is going to have to happen now, and because it doesn't look good, and you know, ooh, and all of that kind of thing, but it's what, you know, it's what you're saying. It's part of it, at least. It's just where my attention is, what I'm focusing on. And I like what you said about no matter what's going on, there's a lot more I can focus on that to be grateful for, and that is going well, so to speak, no matter what's going on. So there's plenty of that to focus on always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when we consider that, we see how small is the world of ego. Mm. Right? So that's its whole deal, right, is to completely disregard everything that's going well, everything that's good in our lives and in the world in general, and just focus on that, just narrow everything down to what's wrong in this minute. So even with a health issue, it's not focusing on that all the time, right? It wants to point out, for example, you know, that place that you wanted to go is closed, or that form that was supposed to didn't, or that person didn't, you know, whatever it is that's right there right now, it's happy to focus on what's wrong with that. And then when there isn't anything, that's when it expands it out into, well, what about your health? Right?
Yeah.
So it's a whole program. So I'm reading this. I'm maybe some other people have read it, and so, but I'm not going to say the name of it because it's an extremely disturbing book. But it's the end, so I'll tell you a little bit about what it's about, and then people will know if they read it or not. During World War II, Air Force officer plane crashes in the ocean, 47 days on a life raft, and then gets put in a Japanese prisoner of war camp for 2.5 years. This goes on 2.5 years of just unspeakable circumstances. Constantly I go to a place of, I can't even imagine how people continue to go on under those circumstances. And some of the things that they did in order to continue to go on is steal. So the game of stealing from their captors would keep them alive. Just that little focus on how can, and of course the stakes are life and death. They get caught, they get killed, right? But to focus on how to make this little thing happen, this little thing go their way, this little tiny triumph would be the thing that sustained them. And most of us, of course, live in exactly opposite circumstances, right? Where we, so much goes our way, right? And we lose sight of that because we're focused. So it's fascinating to me how, just that juxtaposition or the, what Michael just used the word, paradox. You know, that those two things, they're the exact same process reversed.
Right. Yeah. So in other words, most of us live very comfortable lives and spend most of our lives taking all the stuff that's working for granted. But, you know, the long line at the grocery store or the hot weather or the whatever it is, and that's what we talk about in conversations.
Yes.
Not only in mine, but in our minds, but with each other, you know. And that's how we bond with each other, is by talking about those things. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And we know it's silly or crazy or whatever it is. And, of course, when we have that realization, the system, as you're saying, is right there to point out how selfish we are, how ungrateful we are. You know, what's the matter with you that you have all of this stuff and you're focused on, you know, and if we fall for that, of course, we fail to notice that it's the exact same voice that was talking us into focusing on all of that stuff is now beating us up for having focused on that stuff.
Right. Yeah. So that's a great thing. A great point about it is that we could easily get talked into once again, I'm doing this and what a bad person I am.
Right.
But instead to realize, yes, that is what can be the condition of many of us humans, to be focusing on the negative, you know, or whatever. But the reason that happens is not because we set out to do that deliberately.
That's right.
It's because we have something in there that is continually at us and feeding us our lines and saying,
that's exactly,
you know,
right. Yep. Because we have been conditioned. We have been programmed. Now, one of the things, again, in this book is an exploration of prejudice. And how prejudice happens is exactly how egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate works. You know, there's just information over and over and over and over about how that's wrong and that's bad and they're that way and they're that way and they do that and they feel that way and they're not like us and that's what's wrong, that's what's wrong, that's what's wrong, that's what's wrong. And given enough of that, any group of people can be turned against anything and forget everything that they've believed and thought and felt before to go into a frenzy of hatred Okay, it's same thing. It's exactly what's going on in conditioned mind all the time.
Hmm. We're convinced into believing something that isn't true because
right.
we hear it from an authority over and
yes.
over again, whether
That's
that
right.
authority is internal or external.
That's right. Yes. And, of course, the authority is always internal
mm-hmm.
in that sense that it becomes mm-hmm. real to us when it gets inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
So the
right.
voice that could say to you, well, what about, you know, in the middle of the night when it wakes you up and there's a pain or there's a this or a that, well, what about? Mm-hmm. And we don't stop and think that, wow, that's an authority inside my mind that I look to tell me about my life experience. Wow. Right?
Mm.
But how did that get in there? Well, it's an accumulation of stories like that and unexamined beliefs about what life is and what it means and when life is good and when it isn't and reward and punishment and death and all kinds of things that we've just taken in over at least a lifetime, just internalized without ever realizing that we're getting these messages and that we're believing them and that they are becoming the authority that we turn to.
Mm. Yeah.
I'll give you one little example, and that is the number of people that I talk to, and probably you do too, who stay in jobs that they absolutely despise because the job offers benefits.
Mm.
And it is inconceivable to most people that you would choose happiness now over a fear of the future. Because the conditioning is, that's silly, that's irresponsible. What you should do is endure anything now in an effort to prevent bad things from happening in the future. The unexamined belief there is, if bad things don't happen to me in the future, I'll be happy. But, of course, I'm not happy now, and nothing bad is happening now. Yeah?
Yeah, right. And we don't, but we don't even think to question it.
No, it's just
reality.
It doesn't
even occur. Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know I'm way over time. I just have one quick question to end. Do you have any homework, in quotes, that it occurred to me to ask you related to working with this health stuff that you would suggest?
Yes, because you started out with it. You spent one day on joy and one day on
mm-hmm.
gratitude. And so the work is to mix them up, right? One day joy, one day gratitude. Next day joy, next day gratitude. Next day joy, next day gratitude. And the challenge there, obviously, is that conditioned mind likes what's new. Now, it likes what's new right until somebody tries to get out of their rut. And then suddenly it doesn't like what's new. But what it will want to do, so you focus today on joy, and then after gratitude day, here comes joy. Well, we already did that. Okay? I mean, what else is there to? And the work, if you will, is to prove to yourself that you can experience joy all the time, anytime, whenever you want, whenever you turn your attention there.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than letting conditioned mind say, well, you need something new and a new project, a new something or other, so that you're automatically drawn into the present or it's easy to come into the present because you're doing something new and different and exciting,
mm-hmm.
we need to train ourselves
mm-hmm.
to come back to the present and have the experience that we choose
mm.
when it's the same one we've been doing day after day after day after day for as long as we can remember.
Wow.
So, yeah. And so, Jeff, one of the things, here's a perfect example of it. people get bored almost immediately with turning their attention to the breath. But I'll tell you what, if you clamped a hand over their mouth and nose and held them down, they will become compelled by the breath just like that, right? And it's that kind of focus that we want to realize is ours to be in charge of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so literally, your life is dependent upon your ability to stay focused on joy and gratitude. Your life is dependent upon that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. It's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry, very much.
Your assignment. Thank you, sir. I'm saluting.
Okay. I'm saluting back.
All right. Good night, Jeff.
Good night. Good night, Michael.
Good night, and thank you for joining us, Jeff. Sherry, we're going to hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
This year's theme is training to live in this year now. In any training, having a personal trainer helps tremendously. We can think of Zen Awareness coaches as personal trainers. The coaches have been trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching with any number of life issues or awareness practice in general, with special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to Living Compassion, having a coach also supports practice. To request a Zen Awareness coach, visit sanghamarket.com. Go to Services, under All Categories. Click on the little monk at the bottom, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Anne. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. How are you?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Anne from England, and it's my first time calling in.
Well, welcome. So you also are up in the middle of the night doing this very heroic thing.
Yes, and my heart is pounding. I can't believe. I had no idea what I was going to hear, whether I was, you know, in order to ask the question. So that was a very strange experience.
Uh-huh.
But I'm really happy I got on. I'm really happy.
Me
and,
too.
I've been listening to you and Michael now for hours on end in my car, and it's really strange listening to the program live because it's kind of, I'm not sure which is live and which is not. You know, it's just kind of strange.
Uh-huh, especially in the middle of the night.
Yes, and I've been kind of trying to keep myself awake all evening and convince myself I'm not tired, and that worked really well. I didn't listen to any of the voices. Yeah.
Yeah, so, good. And of course, now you're really not tired because your heart is pounding so hard that you couldn't sleep if you tried. So that's good.
Yeah. I want to talk about a couple of things, Sherry. The first thing is about a connection with a person that we both have. A lady called Anna from Cheshire, from England also. Anna and Poppy.
Yes.
Anna is my best friend, and she's been trying to convince me for a long time now to go on the radio show. And so I know she'll get a nice surprise tomorrow when she hears, when she listens back.
That's good.
Hi, Anna. Anna introduced me to Living Compassion about 7 years ago, and I've been a massive fan of your literature and not really listened to any of the radio shows or got involved in Living Compassion other than reading the books up until last November.
Uh-huh.
So I found your books really helpful, and I've been practicing mindfulness myself for about 20 years with different teachers. And I finally, one day last November, I kind of reached the end of my Taylor, and I just signed up for Project Joy and had the most amazing experience.
Oh, wonderful. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Yes, loved Project Joy, and we got involved in recording and listening. It was a bit of a slow start because I found it quite challenging, but I persisted with it. There might have been times I let it go, but then in February I signed up for the year-long retreat, and we have the Zen stories, the email class with Zen stories. And
The
Zen stories?
Oh, uh-huh.
Can you hear me okay? Yeah?
I can. I didn't quite track the connection, the year-long retreat and the Zen stories. I missed a bridge there.
Okay. I'd done Project Joy and had really enjoyed it, but kind of not really got into the recording and listening. Didn't really get it. I guess... Would recording and listening is a process that you have to do in order to get it?
Yes. It is a practice, isn't it?
Yes, it's a practice. And I found that by persisting with it, and then I signed up for the year-long retreat, and we started off with the email class on the Zen stories.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then I kind of, basically what I'm saying is that I've really fallen in love with recording and listening. It's a long way around to say that. And I found it changed my life tremendously. And
I am so glad. I am so glad. You know, when you say that about it, and I say that, you say you have to do it in order to fall in love with it, and I say, yes, it's a practice. It's so perfectly Zen. You know, there is nothing about Zen that a person can learn, right? There just isn't. There's no understanding Zen, right? So because it's a practice, and all we get is what we do. So as you say, you do recording and listening, and you have an experience of recording and listening. And there. Now then, of course, we'll all make the mistake of trying to explain what it is that we got or why we love it or what the difference is and that sort of thing. Yeah. But it's really quite a waste of time because the only thing that there is to know is the experience that we're having, and what we see very quickly when we're having an experience is that we really can't know anything about it. So we just smile at each other and put in our earbuds and go about our lives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah. And the thing about recording and listening that I found really amazing was that I actually wasn't aware of the voices until I started recording and listening. And
then
you go through, that was a shock. And then you go to where the voices get louder, and you start listening to the voices. And then what I found now is that as soon as I hear the voices, I know that I'm on the right track. And everything they tell me to do, I do the opposite.
Very good.
Just feel really lit up by it. Yeah, it's still, I'm not saying it's not a struggle. It is. It is a struggle. But for example, one of the things I'm really lit up about at the moment is the African Vulnerable Children's Project.
Mm-hmm.
I started, I work in a school for underprivileged children, and we've started a big campaign with regards to supporting the project. And the voices were telling me, don't do it, it'll fail, they won't get it, they've got enough problems of their own, they're just not going to engage. But my experience has been the opposite.
Oh.
And it's just fantastic to see. Really amazing, you know.
Isn't that amazing?
It is
wow.
Amazing, yeah. And I've never got involved in the project before, so it's the first for me also.
And what's the age group of your students?
The average age is 13.
Is how?
13.
13. Uh-huh.
13, yeah.
And so they can leave their own, we would label them, right, underprivileged or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily.
No.
Right? I was a poor kid. I grew up super poor. I had no idea that I was poor. You know, there was no evidence that I was poor. And it was a long time, actually. I think I was, you know, I'd already left home before it occurred to me that I was somebody that people would call poor. So it's not necessarily one's internal experience. So there's nothing to say a child that we would see as underprivileged wouldn't still want to be generous. Why not?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't feel compassion for people with less and want to be generous.
Yeah. And that's been my experience, and it's an ongoing project for the next couple of months. So I'm going to try and blog it and maybe put it on. I assume I'd be able to write it as part of a blog and just kind of give a storyline of what happened with it, just as an experience, maybe for other people. I don't know what you would suggest with that.
Well, I what occurred to me right then is that I hope you will write it up and that you will send it to us.
Okay.
So that people here and around the world in Sangha can see what you're doing and what the kids are doing there, and that's inspiring.
Okay, I will do that.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. And I'm aware of taking up time, so I have one quick question. I need a bit of advice, please.
Of course, you know, I never give advice, right? But I often have suggestions or encouragements or things
I
like
need
that.
Some uh-huh. suggestions. Yes.
Encouragement or a suggestion. Okay, good. Something to try.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Okay. I've had a really difficult year in that I've lost my mom and I've lost a very close friend, and it's just one thing after another, and I found practice has really helped me get through the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
But just yesterday, I found out my sister's got cancer. I just think it's one of the things just I will just continue like this, and I think my practice really helps me. No, I know it does. And the suggestion that I would like some help with is, how could I help her?
Uh-huh.
Can you give me
What is your relationship like? I mean, do you live close? Are you close?
Yeah, very close.
You live close and you are close.
We're in the same country. We're a couple hundred miles apart.
Uh-huh. But close
we are
to one another.
Yes.
You talk often?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so knowing her as you do, what occurs to you? What are you thinking?
From just doing the Enneagram email class, my instant when you say that to me, it'd be about listening.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Active listening.
Yeah. Yeah. And letting her know. I mean, this is uncharted territory, right?
Yeah.
Neither one of you has any experience with this whatsoever, right?
No.
So even though conditioned mind would make us believe that we should know what to do or how to do it, we don't. And so you're both going to be finding your way through it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be just to be really clear with one another about that. That now is really the time to be absolutely honest, to promise not to take anything personally. Right? To just do your best to stay in unconditional love. I think I told people this on a call recently. Maybe it was on open air. I 1989 was my year. I just, you know, it just there were so many deaths in that year, and I was just kind of reeling. And this very good friend said, just give yourself permission for anything. Give yourself permission to be any way you are at any time. And my specialty was losing keys. And so, I would go in a store, I would come out, I would have lost my car keys, right? And so I just went and made all of these things of keys so that it was impossible for me to lose enough keys that I couldn't get in the house or get in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just no room for criticism or judgment about how I was handling it. And so I would wish that for you and your sister. Both of you. Both of you. Just no standards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Standards are just out the window. Everybody gets to be however they are and embrace it in unconditional love. Now, of course, the ideal is that we're there all the time, right? But
yeah.
Sometimes it takes something like this for us to get there. And then as Jeff was pointing out earlier, we strive just to stay there when it's behind us and we're moving on and life is, in quotes, back to normal. We want to do our best to stay focused on that same no standards, just unconditional love.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
Will you keep in touch? Let me know.
I will do, and appreciate that. It's just really nice to hear your voice, and that really helps.
Mm. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Let me know. Let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Will do. And one kind of thing, and a happy note to just leave on a happy note. Anna and I have pledged to each other to plan to come and retreat together. In the foreseeable future,
foreseeable future, I like that.
So you know, if we don't make that decision, it won't happen. So we need to get recording and listen around that, I think, to make sure it happens. So
yeah, very good. We'll put some energy behind that on this side of the pond. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thank
okay,
you. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, Michael. Bye. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. Well, that was a very fun conversation, Sherry. Inspiring.
I got to go to England.
You're right.
I can feel it. I can feel the pull. I can feel the pull. Yeah. I mean, we have wonderful sangha. We have wonderful sangha. Over there.
Yes, everywhere. It's amazing.
Everywhere. Uh-huh. But these folks are consistently up in the middle of the night to join us. It really is inspiring. I definitely do want to meet them halfway. So.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Great. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
I'm Justin from Vermont.
Well, hello, Justin. How are you doing?
Hi, Sherry. I'm well, thanks. It's nice to hear your voice.
Are we talking for the first time?
I met you once at a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat at your place in California.
Aha. Uh-huh. All right.
That was something about 10 years ago. And I had discovered you in the library of my first Vermont home, which was a Buddhist retreat center. and I found one of your books on the shelf there. And since then I think I've collected most of them, and I think really more than anything, they've spoken to me. So thanks.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that. So what's going on currently?
Well, you know, one of the things that started back then was a process. My awareness process has I think for me naturally being kind of a body person, liking sport and physical things, it's been kind of natural to bring awareness practice to my body. And at some point, getting body work led me to become a body worker. And it's one of the things that continually challenges me to, continually challenges me to keep my helping patterns aside from the work of being a therapist. And partly I was going to ask for advice, but I learned from the last caller. I mean, I think my question to myself and to you and Michael is that what I think is not out there so much in the West around body work is this idea that it's a two-way street. It's kind of like the mentor relationship that you're talking about, but it's a different kind of conversation. And so I guess partly I'm looking for thinking about other trainings like Traeger or Feldenkrais that have this idea that, like, we have marvelous equipment, and the idea is to get a person more in tune with all of their facilities. But the other part is very much for me to try to continue to remember that I'm good and that I'm not trying to help people to establish my worth.
Uh-huh. Okay. So are you a student of the Enneagram?
I've looked at it a little bit. I haven't done your class. I think there's a helper on there, isn't there?
Yes. Yes, I was wondering if you had done that. Yes, and probably
yep.
Since you've identified yourself in that way, then yes, probably when you do take the test, they'll say, yes, indeed, you are a helper.
I imagine it would, yeah.
Yeah, and so what you're, if I'm understanding you, so what you're looking at is your need to help, if we can say it that way, to bolster your sense of self-worth. If you help somebody, if you do a good job for them, then you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, yeah, and I like to think that some of it is that I want to think that some of it isn't pattern. I want to think that some of it is really rational, and I guess I want to not be under the control of the pattern too.
Yeah, and so I want to ask you about something else that you said. So if I connected this up correctly. So
yeah.
part of that is, are you having a sense that with the people you work with, that sometimes you're more invested in their well-being than they are?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also, unfortunately, I think that and this could be a rationale, but legally the scope of practice is set up in a way that kind of limited about the way that I'm interacting with my clients. I don't
know,
maybe that's an excuse.
Well, you said something about a two-way street, and that's what made me wonder if that's what you were looking at, that there's perhaps an attitude from people that that taking care of their body is kind of your responsibility. Or, you know, I come to you and the idea is you're going to do what you're going to do and I'm going to feel better. And and if I don't, then it's your fault. And if I do, then I give you the credit, but I don't have a lot of responsibility for taking what you offer and applying it to myself and making it mine and making it work.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you, the rationale you've laid out there is that's pretty spot on. And I think the whether or not that's actually what my clients think, I think that that's the belief system that boots up and runs every time, you know, when I'm there, that I'm buying into.
So that's the helper part of it. That's the way to keep you on the treadmill, right?
Yeah.
Keep you wound up. Is this? It would like you to have an overdeveloped sense of responsibility, so that. Again, if it goes well, then you're wonderful, and if it doesn't, then it's your fault. Exactly.
And even when it's wonderful, you know, there's very, very little you can do in an hour to really change patterns that evolve all week long, months, years and years. And then there's just that next client. I have to do it again. So it's like, that's the thing that makes it clearly show up or appear as a self-hate pattern, because it's never done.
Yes, right. You never get that person who says, thank you, I'm fixed, and it's permanent, and yeah. I know the feeling, Justin, I really do. So one of the things that occurs to me to ask you about this is, if you do recording and listening practice.
Yeah. I got the book recently. Well, I was introduced to it really through the retreat a while back, and I'm still figuring it out.
Okay. Well, here's just an idea, not advice. God knows, but just an idea. One of the things that I'm just encouraging everybody I can get my hands on with is to start using recording and listening. So first of all, for yourself, obviously for yourself, because it'll change your practice, it'll change your life, it'll change everything. But then to start using it with your clients so that when you're working with them, first of all, their session is recorded. But what's recorded more than that is the kind of information that you're giving them that's going to, not inspire, because that brings it right back to you again, but will ground their willingness and desire to take care of themselves. So there's what the two of you do together. There's what you encourage them with. There's perhaps a homework assignment. And they have this recording that they take with them, and they're starting to use a recording and listening practice. So they record their intention for the work that you're doing together. They listen to it every morning. You know, what kind of therapy do you do?
I'm trained. The thing is, the massage programs that train therapists now are, they're all actually pretty similar, because most of them are geared towards passing students on the national exam. And you know, I think they don't do, you know, so I'm trained in a, you know, variety of like Western massage techniques, like Swedish deep tissue neuromuscular therapy.
Okay.
All these words that really mean nothing to clients. And,
right. Yes. So when you work on somebody, you have a pretty good sense of what it is that they could be doing that would help them to take care of their bodies. Is this true?
I suppose some, and that's one of the areas that is a little dubious in terms of the scope of practice.
Because it's
considered advising, and I'm not a physiotherapist or a trainer or something.
I see. However, you could talk to people about relaxation?
Yeah, which does come up for lots of people because they point to a number of factors that, you know, that are common to our age, like sitting at a computer for 8 hours a day and things like that, that they see some connection between that and their pattern tensions.
And so would it be within the scope of what you do to be able to show them differences that could happen and ways that they could move and relax their bodies and that sort of thing, or is that outside the scope of what you do?
The real strict letter of the law says it's outside.
Oh, well.
And I think that's yeah. Yeah, it's like that's what the trainer or physiotherapist would give them. It would be a way of also sorting folks out that, you know, if you're interested in looking at ways to break up the stress of sitting all day, we could talk about stretches you can do in your chair or how you might just take a break every 20 minutes. Some people are saying set a timer. Get up, walk the hall once, and come back.
And is that okay for you to say? You can say those kinds of things?
I don't think so, no.
Okay,
yeah,
you know what? I think I'd get a new line of work.
Yeah.
I think that's what you've gotten to, right?
Well, and that's where some of these other modalities that are talking about, like, body-mind re-education or somatic therapy, you know, they do allow you to do that. And I think with massage, it sort of seems like these people put their meat bag on the table and you're supposed to like straighten it out, but it doesn't happen that way.
A couple of things occur to me. One is if you're going to be dictated to by that sort of rigid structure, you're going to continue to be really unhappy. And if you don't want to do that, you know, truly, the odds that anyone is going to sue you because you encourage them to get up and leave their chair and walk down the hall is pretty small.
Yeah.
And so you might just risk it. And if you wanted to do that, and you could do it judiciously, you don't have to, you know, do it with everybody who walks through the door. But, again, I would encourage the recording and listening. Because what that would do is give you an ongoing relationship with somebody rather than they come in, flop down on the table for you to fix them, you do, and they get up, and you know they're going right back to the same thing. It's not satisfactory to either one of you. And so if you have this other element, it brings a depth to the relationship such that you would find more satisfaction, and I bet you they would too.
Yeah, and I think that's what my own journey towards health and healing has shown me, is that it can't be separate from every other place in my life.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So, and using recording and listening with clients, what would that look like?
Well, first of all, we do have a training in it in case you want to get certified. But what you could do with it in the interim, where you're not actually doing the techniques necessarily that we would teach you to do as a therapist in that, is that you just record the sessions and have them come up with what they're going to do to help themselves during the coming week. They make a little recording. I'm going to set the alarm for every 20 minutes. I'm going to walk down the hall. I just got somebody to put music on and dance for 3 minutes, assuming they're, you know, not out in an open space. And so whatever that is, and they record it, and they listen to it every morning, and they may come back, and they tell you how they did and what they saw, and take the next step.
I love it.
Good. And, Justin, can go to recordinglistening.org. And it's all written out, recordingandlistening.org. And it's our website where there's just every kind of information on how to do it. And of course, my hope is you'll do it with yourself. Because as you do it for yourself and with yourself, you know, you'll be able to really be of assistance to somebody else.
Okay. And
good.
Yeah, good.
We got a plan. All right.
Thank you very much.
Goes, huh?
I will. I'll check that out because I could use getting my own practice in that more practice. So I'll check it out.
Clearly, you're at the end of your rope with this other thing. So, you know, we need to put a little spice in the soup. All right. Take care of yourself.
You too. Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Justin. And we've come to the end of the hour, Sherry.
I saw that. Thank you, Michael. That's fun.
It was
so much fun.
I loved it.
We should do it again. Yeah, we'll just do it again.
How's that? Tuesday.
All right. Take care. See you next week.
Okay. You too. Bye.
All right. Good night.